You're listening to the iFanboy Pick the Week podcast, episode 369, brought to you by Mandroid, Chris Hardwick's new comedy special available on CD and DVD from Comedy Central, and iFanboy listeners just like you. You said to not let them find you, remind you to run. The second chance somehow. And all these signs point to nowhere, and you're sure to be lost. You better start learning how to be on your own. Understand it all burns out. Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick Week podcast, episode 369. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And we are from the website, for now, ifanboy.com, which is a...
I was trying to get to that, and I couldn't find it.
Which is a website all about the love and celebration of comic books that is very near and dear to my heart. Every week, we read a stack of comics, and then one of us goes back and writes our pick of the week comic book, pick of the week review of the comic book that we feel was the pick of the week, the book that we enjoyed the most. And then we come back here to talk about it on the podcast, as well as all the other great books that came out this week and other answer your questions and other great stuff. Before we get to the show, a couple of things. First, a quick reminder that we're going to talk about what happens in the comics. So if you haven't read your comic books yet, you might want to press pause, come back and listen later, or you lest ye be spoiled. And we don't want to see that happen, so don't be spoiled. And finally, if you're a big iFanboy follower or a follower of me on Twitter or of Josh or Connor or anybody or Paul, you might have noticed that we had some big news that was announced this past Friday. We're going to talk about it, but at the end of the show. So listen to some comics, enjoy it, and then we'll talk about our little internal stuff. Good times, though. So,
infection.
Yeah. This week, Connor had the pick, and Connor, take it away.
Thanks, Paul.
Not yet. Not yet.
Just practicing.
This week, the pick of the week is Batman number 16, the penultimate issue of the Death of the Family storyline from Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo, Jonathan Glapion, and also, you can't forget, James Tynion IV and Jock, which I think people don't talk about enough, but we'll get to that.
Agreed.
This was the issue where finally the Joker has planned, he's been planning since he's been gone, has been revealed where he has turned Arkham Asylum into a very disturbing court for the King of Gotham, who he considers Batman to be. So we've got a bunch of people welcoming Batman by being forced to dance for days, and there's all kinds of... royal tapestries, a burning horse, and there's a king's court, and there's a sword of the stone, and there's all kinds of really creepy things. And this is where whatever darkness Scott Snyder has in his mind comes to fore.
Oh, does it?
And it really, he really does excel in these creepy stories where he clearly has the ability to go places that are deep and dark, and what the result is, you've got great, you know, almost horror tinged stories with these Batman. This particular one is scary, and it works in that sense. This is the part of the story where you really want to get to the finale. You know, I was tense reading the whole time. It was,
Every page turn is like a heavy page turn.
Yes, you know, and like, there's all kinds of things that are being set up, and they haven't revealed the big surprise, which is what's underneath.
You bought the platinum variant, though. So it was a. Literally.
It's a heavy, very, heavy turn.
This is how you make money today. That's all I'm saying.
There's a big reveal coming, and that hasn't happened yet, but you don't know that for sure, and you're turning the page. You know, each new thing is revealed as you turn the page. You know, the Joker has captured, as we know from the tie-in issues, which we'll get to in a minute, all the sidekicks. They're all captured in Arkham Asylum. I don't know if Batman knows that or not. He has turned the employees of Arkham Asylum into his unwilling subjects. He has, you know, used the other rogues as his allies here, who they're not totally willing, but they aren't unwilling to fuck with Batman. And there's a lot of things going on here, and you're just waiting for it all to explode. And it explodes, at least it starts to explode, by Batman arriving and beating the crap out of everybody to get to the Joker and Two-Face and the Penguin and the Riddler, who are the final four waiting for him. And this has been a really fun and exciting and tense and nerve-wracking story, and this is one of the most tense and nerve-wracking chapters of the entire thing.
Yeah.
Probably the best one since the first.
Yeah, no, I wrote an advance review of this on Tuesday after I read it. And it's funny because the past two issues have come out on my week of the pick of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And I got lambasted for not choosing them. But I had reasons for not choosing them. And this issue, if you ask me, has been the best issue of Death of the Family because it knocked down those reasons why I didn't choose the previous issues. mainly in that I think Snyder is telling one of the best stories from him that I've read yet, as of yet, in terms of the Batman side. Like, mm-hmm. it's so dialed into these characters and so dialed into what's going on. But then the past two issues, I felt as if whether it was Capullo or the inker, Glapion or whatever, but every now, like, while Capullo's great, but the previous issues, there was like one or two pages where I had a problem, or there was like, oh, it looks rushed or whatever. But both Snyder, Capullo, Glapion, everyone was on point with this issue, and this is the tightest, strongest issue of the arc so far.
The art was wonderful, and I meant to mention this in my review, but I forgot, and I feel bad. The coloring from FCO
Placentia.
Yeah, exactly. It was great. There's a great muted tone in the beginning. It sort of looks fuzzy a bit as Batman enters the asylum. When he has the fight with the flaming horse and the guards, it's all smoky, and then the pages look kind of smoky. It looks kind of fuzzy. Really great job on production. And this was a great looking issue. Yep. Great stuff from Capullo, and then the Jock stuff. You tend to forget that Jock's doing the backups, and the backups aren't throwaways. These are important parts of the story. And I found looking at the Jock pages, wondering how creepy this would have been if he had done the whole series. And you know, that's not a knock on Capullo. Capullo's put a stamp on this book, and it just Jock's Joker is particularly disturbing.
The page where he holds the gun to his head, it's sort of the part. Oh.
And you just wonder what kind of different take you would have had Jock done it. And that's the joy of this book, is you've got these two great artists doing this in completely different kind of ways. It's a wonderful looking book, and story wise is just, you know, I can't wait for the next issue. I really need to know what's under the dome, because something bad is under the dome.
What about, I mean, for me, the moment, the my favorite sequence was when, Batman gets attacked, like you said, the smoky kind of mode, but the, when Batman is on the horse, cause it has echoes of Dark Knight.
Yep. Definitely.
You know, and like that's what I think has been the most interesting about this run, is that Snyder has shown such a reverence for what has become before him in terms of Batman, while adding to it. You know what I mean? Like, and making something new with his stories, but also being, you know, mindful of the past. I think it's great.
Yeah, I think Josh, did you have?
This was the best of the Batman issues that I think I've read so far. I really liked it a lot. I liked that the horse paid off from the backup story last time. I think it was odd that the meme going around is that Scott hates horses. Because then Batman has no problem letting the other one take the bullet for him. I liked it. I liked that you got all of the sort of bad guys in one place. I really enjoyed that the backup issue, like, basically took place directly after, or concurrently or something.
Directly after.
Yeah. No one asked what was under the thing. I like that. I thought it was kind of funny that, like, they look different.
Yeah.
Harvey took his wig off. I don't really care. That doesn't bother me at all.
The Riddler lost his sideburns.
Yeah. I know how comics work. Yeah. But It was a good issue. I got done with the end of it, and I was like, all right, now that's, you know, because this, you know, everybody in the world who reads these Batman comics is real into these Batman comics, and I like them. They're fine, but I'm not in love with them. You know, overall, like, they're good. They're fine, but it's not my favorite stuff that even Snyder does. It's just a sort of a genre thing.
Yeah.
But I think it was a really good issue. I really love the cover on this one too. Like, it was just sort of the strongest one out of all of them so far.
I do gotta admit the Joker face stapled to his head is starting to freak me out, because it's starting to rot. Have you noticed that, the coloring on it? Like, it's gotten a little darker now. And it just and the thing is, it's got to sting, right? To not you know, I mean, that's got to hurt.
Stink.
Yeah, it's got to stink too. Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's horrible, horrifying.
I mean, for me, that's the right direction to go in. You don't want, oh, the first one was the best, and everything after that, you're just sort of trying to catch up.
Yeah.
Like, I've been waiting for this climax, and like Connor, you know, I want the next issue. I want to see what happens.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Snyder's really dialed into these characters. He's dialed into the Joker. I think it's a Joker. And you mentioned this. It's a Joker that fits into the Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a Joker who needs Batman. He's nothing without him. He doesn't want Batman to die, because with Batman dead, he's got no purpose. So I like that aspect of the Joker.
Yeah. I did like the video game esque approach to the story of where, you know, basically Batman climbing levels till he gets to the boss level. I thought that was good. It just ratcheted up the suspense and ratcheted up the drama on it. I thought it was great.
I also kind of found it amusing that he just sort of worked his way through Mr. Freeze and Scarecrow very rapidly.
Well, yeah. Well, listen, they only got 20 pages, Connor. I mean,
like boom, boom, boom. I don't have time for this bullshit.
Yeah, exactly.
Which shows you how pissed off Batman is right now. Which I like. This is great. Everything about it, I love it.
Yeah, it's really it's. I mean, it's as not a Batman guy, it is some of the best Batman I've ever read. I think it's great stuff, and I can't even imagine what the next issue is going to be. It's good stuff.
I cannot heap the same amount of praise on Savage Wolverine number one.
So we've been doing the Marvel Now number one review since October.
Jesus, really?
Yes, as the Marvel Now has been the slow roll, and this week the only new one that came out was Savage Wolverine, written and drawn by Frank Cho. And here's the thing: is that I don't know if you guys disagree or not, but it looks pretty. I mean, it's if you like Frank Cho as an artist, it is some great Frank Cho. It is some really good Frank Cho. Frank Cho is a writer, specifically as a writer of Wolverine. And honestly, I got to question some of the editorial at Marvel to let it go through, but Wolverine doesn't say cripes.
Right.
You know, like Wolverine says, Mama Logan didn't raise no whatever he said. You know, like there was some real kind of like, is this guy read Wolverine recently? Like it was just kind of, you know, like, and the thing was is that, you know, later on there was some more, you know, more character correct kind of moments in the fighting and things like that. But I don't think I'm going to stick with this at all.
This read to me, and I don't usually throw this term around, but completely unnecessary.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like it didn't, it seemed like the only reason this book exists is because Frank Cho wanted to do a book or needed to do a book or whatever. But like it didn't feel like I cared. It didn't feel important. And I hate that qualifier for most books, but it just felt like, why are we being told this story? It wasn't a particularly compelling story. It wasn't a particularly interesting story. It was very sort of ham-fistedly written. I understand, you know, people. I think Cho's work can be hit or miss. It's over. Obviously, it's very cheesecakey. I do like the way he draws Wolverine, but I just felt no connection to this book whatsoever. I think I stopped it three times before I finished it. I didn't really like it.
Yeah, Josh.
I didn't read it. He's one of those names for me who like the baggage of his name tends to outweigh the work. I like his work. I like his art. It's nice looking, but every time it's one of those things that, you know, he's going to draw a little bit of it and then he's going to be gone.
Oh yeah, people were worried about this being monthly. It's going to have three issues and then they're never going to see another fourth issue.
Yeah, and the thing is, it really becomes gratuitous. Like I've said this for years now about the X-Men books, is that as awful as it sounds, but there are X-Men books, and Wolverine included, that either matter or don't matter. And, you know, and in terms of the mattering, I'm talking about like the involvement in the grand tapestry of the Marvel Universe and the storytelling and things like that. Savage Wolverine, if you're a Wolverine fan, you can't get enough, and they're, you know, like this is perfect for you. You know, but reading Avengers or reading, you know, Wolverine and the X-Men or whatever, like Savage Wolverine, unless they do some sort of crossover, but isn't going to matter in the grand scheme of that greater story. You know, these are little out of time stories where Wolverine's in the Savage Land fighting with Shawn. It's kind of like Marvel team up.
But there's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that at all. Nothing wrong with that.
Compelling and interesting, but this was nothing. There was nothing compelling or interesting about this that made it worth reading.
Yep, agreed. So that was the only number one issue for Marvel Now. But All New X-Men had another issue, issue 6 in the fastest releasing comic book there is. This is notable because it featured the switch on art from Stuart Immonen to David Marquez, who we're a big fan of David Marquez, and on the most part was fairly seamless, with the exception of some of the double page spreads.
Oh, all of them.
All of them, yeah.
I got tripped up on at least three. Yeah, reading them wrong. And that hasn't happened to me in forever.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's not as if Marquez and Bendis haven't worked together before. You know, they've worked together on Ultimate Spider-Man, did some great work. But I think the rhythm of the storytelling with this many characters and that sort of thing, I think that kind of got in the way. And that's, I mean, I got tripped up too. And, you know, like I was, you know, the double page spread of Kitty talking to young Jean when Storm comes in.
Yes, that was a really bad one.
And so it's a good opportunity to talk about what makes a good double page spread, especially when you're doing panel double page spread, is that you need some sort of indicator in the eye to tell you which way to read the page. And this particular double page spread, it looks like two single pages. The only
I think the gutter being right at the edge of these panels didn't help.
Yeah, the only three panels that cross over the center of the book had maybe a less than a quarter of an inch on the left side and the majority on the right side, and then in the bottom left you had a full figure of Storm, which took away from the bottom half of the page that were spilling over across the middle of the page. We're pretty established comic book readers. This tripped me up. But other than that, it was great, and the story is great. I'm continuing to love what he's doing.
I will to take from the other side. Like, there were pages I really liked a lot. What they did with the lettering.
Yep.
In terms of the production of her, sort of, he's starting to hear all the voices. The one page.
Did you see Bendis tweet about that? Do you know the story with that?
No.
If you look at that, so basically, it's the moment where Jean Grey, her telepathy is kicked in, and she's just getting invaded with all the thoughts of everyone at the school. And it's a great page, a really, really great page of Kitty trying to help her focus. And there are all these thought balloons of people, what they're thinking. And they're supposed to be all the students at the school. For many of those thought balloons, they pulled fan reactions to all new X-Men from message boards.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's a really nice page. Yeah. And like the silent panel at the end is really nice. And I really like the page where Cyclops blasts Wolverine. I love the coloring on that,
that
where
was
it
great.
Went all red.
Yep.
And I like the just sort of the dynamics of that page.
Yeah. No, I think Marquez did like 85 to 90% great.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah.
I will say, for years I had this problem with Bendis on his work. With double page spreads on paper. Not digital.
Digitally,
in other books.
It's fine.
Digitally, because I read it digitally, I actually didn't have much problem.
Yeah,
because I knew it was a double page spread, but it used to be in paper ones where you'd start to read it down instead of across. But digitally, I can tell because the shape changes.
Right.
I've had that problem with Bendis for years.
Yeah, no, it was really interesting in that regard. And I called it out in the panels of the week, but loved the scene of Cyclops at the convenience store.
Yeah,
like this is the plane.
$5.
Yeah, magazines. $5. And why is all the water in bottles?
$5.
Listen, buddy, you order a Pepsi, you're gonna pay for it, right?
Yeah. He's wearing Wolverine's jacket too.
I know. Yeah, with the motorcycle.
Jacket.
Yeah, the jacket.
He's a lot of cash around. I like that too.
Yeah, and why? That was great. Why does he have all this money? Like,
the thing is. Why does he?
Yeah, it's good. Well, you never know.
Or why doesn't he?
Yeah.
It's a better question.
Yeah. So, yeah, All New X-Men continues to be great. So,
wise guy doesn't carry the wallet.
Here's a wad.
Yeah, with a beaner on the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beaner running.
This is one of my favorite issues of Daredevil.
Holy crap. Mark Waid writing Dr. Octopus as Spider-Man. Love it.
Yeah.
Great. Talk about totally picking up the ball and running with it. Fantastic.
This was nonstop fun. I loved every little bit of this from the way it looked. I love how saturated the coloring. I love how it's so bright and it pops. It's almost like pop art.
Yep.
It's not really, the Marvel stuff for a long time was very the gritty sort of dark, muddy coloring, but they've come around on guys like Matthew Wilson and people like that, Javier Rodriguez in this one. And I just love the way this book looks.
Yeah. No, the book looks great, but for me it was the Spider-Man crossover and just how it was pitch perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just like the little miscommunications, like, and again, like this is the second time it was in Winter Soldier where like I just with that scene with Captain America and Daredevil and Spider-Man and Wolverine where like this idea of these heroes who've been doing it for so long who work in sync and they just kind of depend on each other and in a fight they know what to do, and there's that moment where Stiltman is fighting, Superior Spider-Man and Daredevil.
Net.
Yeah. Yeah. And Daredevil jumps to save people from the helicopter and just yells, "Net, net." And he's like, "Spidey, net." And then it takes a second because Dr. Octopus doesn't know what that means. And, it was really, and you get the sense that, Daredevil senses something's wrong, but who knows? And that's what makes the Superior Spider-Man thing interesting in my eyes.
One thing I did think is that I feel like I have read this story before with Stiltman and he comes back and everyone's laughing about him, but then he's really good at it.
Wasn't it the All Red issue or no?
I feel like it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, it was the All Red
issue.
And
maybe more than once.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's fine.
And I do gotta give Somni credit. I could smell the bacon and Limburger cheesecake. Like, talk about great cartooning. Like, just
it was an Archie panel.
Yeah, that was an Archie panel, totally.
and then he just plows into it with his face and two hands.
Yeah. Not professional.
I like that I'm not the person who complains. Well, this is kind of silly. I'm glad I'm not that guy, and maybe anymore.
You know. Well, that's good.
And you're not that guy either, so.
I don't know if I'm probably, I probably was that guy at one point.
Yes, you were.
Fuck off. Fuck off.
So, I'll be honest with you. This is probably my least favorite issue of Saga.
I do find myself disappointed when the issue wholly focuses on just one, not on Marco or Alina. Like, just the bounty hunter, you know, just the what's his name? The Will. Just the Will issues, I do get a little disappointed.
Nope.
Because I want to know what's going on.
Wrong.
Yeah?
He's interesting. I want to know.
I think he's interesting, yeah. But
they're giving us a little bit of it.
Yeah.
This is the nature of these books. They go over here for a little bit, and then they'll go back to the other people.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, all the characters are interesting enough that, like, you know, I don't mind a few issues if we go spend the time with Prince Robot the Fourth. Yeah. I want to know more about that.
Yeah.
To me, it was somewhat about that. I thought story-wise it was one of those chapters that was good, but, you know, it would have been read better in the middle of a trade paperback. But I thought art-wise, it was a lot of rough pages.
Yeah.
I thought the coloring was really flat in a lot of it, and not good in a good way, like we just talked about with Daredevil. It looked like it was like fill-in with a paintball bucket tool.
Interesting.
Like, I'm going to get the page where they call to try to get the girl back. They call that purple woman.
Yeah.
The coloring is just really strangely flat. The characters, like with the Will standing with his hands on his hip, his thighs looks weird.
Oh, now I see that.
I think there's a lot of strange, you know, subpar for Fiona Staples' art, which I think she's great, but I thought this issue there was a lot of glaring
interesting
stuff about it.
Yeah. Well, they're human, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm not, you know, it's just the way it goes sometimes. Yeah,
I didn't see that. I did like the lance.
Yeah.
That was a cool weapon. And I also did you notice in that page he's got a cowl?
Yeah, I didn't notice that before.
Yeah, it's like I don't know. I mean, yeah, I mean, like I mean by no means is it, I didn't think this was bad. I see what you're pointing out now.
No, I gave it 4 stars. Yeah, it's bad for Saga.
Exactly.
Which just makes it a 4-star book.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of 5. Yeah. It's probably the first 4 I've given this series.
Yeah. So. Yep.
I'm sorry. Josh, did you read it?
I liked it. I just told you.
I know, but I just opened up a whole new bunch of criticisms for it, dude. Never mind. It's fine.
It's fine. Right. It's good. I had no problem. I was happy to have it, and I probably was not as critical as I may have been on other things.
Okay.
Because I was like, woohoo! Yeah. I'm reading Saga.
Yeah, I mean it's an event in and of itself, you know. Yeah. So, but to your point, Connor,
it's just that you guys are a little bit nitpicky, and I know that it's maybe it's just time to bring this up now. Irony.
I did like getting to see Lion Cat in business. That was good.
Yes. But, no. Yeah. I like these characters. I just for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So you guys know Chris Hardwick, or of him.
Of him.
Yes, and everyone out there in podcast land knows who Chris Hardwick is.
Josh has met him.
I interviewed him when I worked at G4, like after he was done with Singled Out, but before anybody else knew who he was.
Well.
But he was the fat drunk period. He's very open about that. I'm not making that up.
Well, if you've never met him, Chris Hardwick's from the Nerdist podcast. He's from the Talking Dead show, and he's from the upcoming Nerdist TV show on the BBC America. But he also does stand-up comedy. And his first stand-up comedy special, Mandroid, is going to be released on CD and DVD. And it's going to be available on January 22nd, probably by the time you've heard this podcast. DVD is extended and uncensored. It's 20 minutes of bonus material that wasn't broadcast on TV when they aired the show originally. And it's got cool Easter eggs. You can get it at both Amazon and on iTunes. That's Chris Hardwick's Mandroid. Coming January 22nd.
And you'll want to stay tuned because we're going to have some more interesting Chris Hardwick Mandroid stuff. So go to ifanboy.com and look for a post next week and then on next week's podcast as well.
Yep.
So. Does he interview Drew Carey at that point in anywhere in there? No?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. So. I think that was the last episode I listened to. They went to his house. It's all.
It's your
book. So I like Comeback number 3. Are you reading this yet?
It's in my to-read pile. I'm not,
I recommended this before, and I'm a little disappointed.
No, I know, I know.
It's a time travel story about people who are hired to go back and fix something and bring the person forward, and it's all very illicit. And there's, but then the company within the company itself, there's like a breakdown, and they're trying to kill off people. And I'm kind of confused, but I really like it.
Cool. No, trust me. Don't worry. I'll be reading it.
I know that. But now if it's for the wrong reason. I can sit here and tell you, oh, you need the reason. Like, sure, sure, sure. But now you're like, sure thing, Mr. Kirkman. And I just.
Yeah.
So, that clear. It's a good book. And I think that Michael Walsh is a name that people are going to know more sooner than later. Jordi Belair coloring it, I think. I think that's
because she colors everything.
It's true, but she colors things good.
She colors them well. I'll give her that credit. Yeah.
It's a pretty confusing story, so actually read them all at once. It will probably help.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just like I know there's a chart somewhere that explains it, but I think I know what's going on.
No.
It's interesting.
Cool. New Avengers number 2 made more sense, but it still hurt my head.
Yeah. Is this a Jock cover, by the way?
Yes.
So good.
Yes. It's right there in the bottom right-hand corner. Who are these people on the cover?
Oh. Well, let's see. So that's...
looks like Beast.
Why do they all have two fingers?
They're holding up two fingers to make a star.
I do a post about this. No. Well, actually.
Whose fingers are those? Yeah, that's a good question. Oh, you know, I think Beast is going to be part of this Illuminati. I think he's going to represent the mutants. So it could be Beast.
Right. Yeah, they need a new mutant.
Yeah, because Xavier is gone. Anyway, I feel like the first issue in this issue should have been like a double-sized first issue, because I think with that as the prologue and then this is the next issue was good. Explain some more. It's definitely explained a little more, but wow, talk about high concept.
Yeah.
You know, although I do love the idea of multi. I mean, like the charts with the multiverses and stuff like that was awesome. Yeah.
I just don't feel like Cap would be on this team.
Interesting.
You know, I feel like the whole idea of a secret team running everything in the background is totally against Cap's worldview.
But he has Gem.
I just don't feel like he would put up with it.
Where do you think Cap puts the Gem? By the way, like I can understand.
He's got a lot of pouches in his belt.
I can understand. Doctor Strange put it in some dimension, and Namor hide it underwater. You know, and Reed Richards can put it in some. You know, in the negative zone. Cap's just putting it like on in Brooklyn.
Richards. Duffel bag in a gym in Brooklyn.
Yeah, exactly. Where no one would suspect.
He put a piece of gum on it. He stuck it under a seat at Nouché.
Yeah.
Where no one goes.
Yeah.
And that's
right.
Hey. In addition to the announcement this week that Superman Family Adventures has been canceled, I believe that Art Franco and Balthazar are no longer writing Green Lantern, the animated series book. They haven't written the last two issues, and the book has suffered mightily.
Interesting. Well, they're not writing the Superman Family Adventures yet either.
Right.
Yeah.
Just said that.
Yeah.
It's, you know, this
Somebody's
was my
field and calls over there.
This was my, he's getting texts already. This was my favorite Green Lantern book because it's an all ages book, but it had a bit of spark of wit and whimsy that they give, you know, that those guys are capable of writing all ages books that everyone can appreciate.
Yeah.
This one feels much more simple. So I might have to stop buying the book as much as I enjoy the show and had been enjoying this book up until they changed writers.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. I was enjoying it though.
Yeah.
What are those guys going to do if they're not doing these books?
Well, they both have day jobs.
Do they?
Yes. We met them in San Diego. One of them's an art teacher. I guess the artist.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
So I'm continuing to enjoy the sci-fi, alternate universe world of Captain America now. As he's trapped in the dimension. Isn't it great?
It's so Kirby-esque. People... complaining don't know the history of comics, which you don't need to know the history of comics to enjoy a book. I grant that. But this is so old school Cap. You have that Cap, that Jack Kirby Cap omnibus, he travels through time, he teams up with the Founding Fathers, he does all kinds of crazy science stuff, which is what he used to do in the 60s. And this is sort of returning to that feeling.
Yeah, totally. And it's even got a little commandy to it, you know, a long blonde hair man trapped and with a bunch of monsters and things like that. But it's great, and I'm enjoying the little flashbacks back to the Lower East Side of the 1920s.
They look wonderful.
They look beautiful. Yeah, those are the best pages of this issue. And but ultimately the ending, that last page, I laughed. I was like, awesome. Like, that's, yeah, great. You know, he's got a Zola in his chest. That's awesome.
I think one of the biggest indicators this book is meant to be a throwback to that era is that if you look at the letters page, it's all yellow paper in the background. It looks like it's an old comic from that time period.
Yeah.
I just think this is the best thing that they've given John Romita to draw for mm-hmm. John Romita in such a long time. That part makes it really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really does feel like one of those comics. And like, you know, like we said before, you know, you have to go in a different direction than what Brubaker has been doing for 8 years or something like that.
8 years.
That's how you do it.
I totally the right direction. You know, because if he'd gone to the 1940s or done espionage or whatever, it would have been so hard to swallow. But like, this is a great little side adventure. So.
Yep.
Conan number 11 was pick of the week last time. And Conan the Barbarian number 12 was also really good. In fact, it was as good as the last issue.
Was it your pick of the week?
No, I don't know if I've nailed that down. I didn't have to. It wasn't my week. Mm. I just read with a flourish.
This was your pick of the week an Image book?
Might have been.
Mm.
Might have been. I don't remember what I rated. I gave a couple of fives out. I know that. Basically, though, you know, as we let the last one, the whole thing was like this sad tone to the whole thing because you thought, well, God, is he going to leave them all to die? And this one, they sort of figured their way out of it. So I thought it was a really nice bit of plotting. And it was a fun issue. And now, but then there was a big tragedy. I'm being very vague because, you know, if you're reading it, you know it's fine. But if not, maybe you'll go back and read it later because you should. Again,
does one of them get taken over by Dr. Octopus?
Not a single character, as far as I know. There's no mind control. And I think we're better off for it. It was really fun, sort of tough guy Conan. What I really like about this book is every once in a while I remember that this is like early days Conan. He's not like the later king of everything Conan. He's sort of just still, you know, bumming around and getting in scraps and whatnot. And he's a little younger, a little more immature. It sounds really funny because I'm talking about Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah. Is this the Conan who tweets?
He would. Well, no. No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't have a phone.
No,
he wouldn't do that.
How would he Instagram?
This is a very strange conversation.
I'm just waiting like, for your like, that's like to kick in.
That's like the kind of question that a clueless executive would ask. Would this Conan tweet? No, like the kind of a joke thing in the montage of like the filmmakers trying to get their stuff made, yeah, and going to visit stupid people.
Could Conan be on Instagram?
No. I think he would. Okay. This is fine.
So those are the books we wanted to talk about this week. You can go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can make your own pull list. You can rate and review your books, and you can make your own pick of the week. And like we like to run down the top five picks of the week as chosen by the audience. As always, these are the numbers as at the time of recording, so they could change, but they're not going to change that much.
Because it is a Batman. It is a Batman week, isn't it? So.
Top five.
Batman, it's a saga. Oh.
Top five picks of the week. Number five, The Little Depressed Boy. Number 15 from Image Comics at 1.5%. Number four, All New X-Men. Number six at 2.2%. You can already see where this is going. Number three is New Avengers. Number one at 3.8%. Number two, Saga. Number nine is 6.6%. And number one, Batman 16 with 81.7% of the picks of the week.
The double, it's like two heavyweights met up, and there was just a really unexpected knockout.
It's a double whammy. It's crazy, and it was a generally light week. I mean, I think I spent $30.
Yeah, no, I bought 12 books, which is light. And I think the issue of Batman versus the kind of issue of Saga, it was a very sort of middle chapter Saga issue versus a big chapter of Batman. So that's why they walked into the ring and Batman laid him out like Guy Gardner.
He hadn't been training. That was better than what I was going
to
say.
So. That seems to be the trend today.
I'm on cold medicine.
So on to the user review.
I'm having trouble with the separation.
So when you go to ifanboy.com/comics, you can also leave a review of the books you've read and want to highlight some of the reviews from the iFanboy community. And Director 421 reviewed Batgirl number 16 and gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And nobody made it their pick of the week, which is okay because it was a Batman week. And Director 421 says, Gail Simone continues to treat Barbara with tremendous care and respect. Batgirl's hatred for Joker is palpable, and her struggle to fight her instinct to just kill him is balanced evenly with caution to save her mother. The action on the page flows well, and the addition of James Jr. to the mix takes the fight to the next level. There's some who don't find Ed Bettis' art serving the story as well as it could be, but I'm not one of them. The split art duties are fairly smooth, although I do wish Bettis would complete one full issue for continuity's sake. It does feel rushed sometimes when dual artists are just on 22 pages, but Daniel St-Pierre does a nice job on his end here. So there you go. Some more Death of the Family.
I meant to mention this in the top section, but no disrespect to this book, but I found most of these tie-ins to be fair to middling, and completely unnecessary.
That is what I've heard.
Yeah. The only ones I've thought were good were the Nightwing one. Well, I think it's only been one of those, but I thought all the rest of them. I read Suicide Squad, I read Red Hood, I read Batman and Robin, Batgirl. I think they've all been pretty fair to middling.
Yeah.
The kind of tie-ins people complain about, you know.
Yep.
So there you go.
It's crazy. All right, next Josh, review, Josh. I just read the username.
The username is It's Bloody Michael Caine.
This is my new favorite user, by the way. I don't even know what the review
this
says.
This guy got a review on the show simply for having an awesome username, so they'll have to be able to.
It's all he had to do. He did Captain Marvel number 8. No, 9. Sorry. He did 9. I'm not going to do the whole thing like that. give the story. I can do this. I'll do the stats, though. Gave the story a 3 out of 5. And the art, a 4 out of 5, sir. Picking a weak percentage, 0.1%. Why do we pick it? Is pick it a weak, sir? I don't know. Why? Would Conan use Instagram? You're not making any sense, Michael Caine. How old was she, though? Conan was only 16. Old. The art is a welcome change from the previous first issues, although it retains the non-conventional aspect of it. Andrade's art reminds me of Aeon Flux, and the storytelling is derivative of a sort of European dynamism. Thank God I didn't have to read that in the other voice. Both Andrade's art reminds me of Aeon Flux. Yeah, I can't even do it. The dialogue is very natural, and you would immediately know that it's actually women talking between panels. Compliments to DeConnick in that regard. I would certainly say that for slice of life feel of the book, I would certainly stay for the slice of life feel of the book so long as it can keep the stakes reasonable, like what we could see in the last page. All right.
All right.
Those are the books you go to fanboy.com.
Whoa. We're going to talk about Captain Marvel a little bit. If you enjoyed Captain Marvel number 9, go back to iFanboy Don't Miss and listen to me chat with Kelly Sue DeConnick, where we talked about this issue and got a lot of insight on the art and the dealing of Carol's hair and some other stuff going into the title. So, it was
about the mullet.
Yeah, we talked about the mullet. Yeah, she's as bewildered as the rest of us.
Well, she had nothing to do with it.
But she does claim that she has a fix for it, and then she's just waiting to get editorial approval to do a one shot about the hair. So, which I hope
is never going to happen.
Yeah.
I would read a whole issue about a haircut.
I would totally.
Parker got his.
But I will say that the artist Felipe Andrade. Go check. I mean, honestly, Josh and Connor, check it out because it has a very European meets Japanese kind of style.
That was
awesome.
That's
exactly what this person just said.
Yeah, I know. No, I know. And I'm agreeing with it. And it's that it's really...
said it better than you.
I know.
You know, and I hear there's an opening.
European dynamism. but really, really interesting, really kind of curious kind of fit there on the art side. So,
yeah. You really enunciated European fantastically.
Thank you. I tried. So... Go to ifanboy.com/comics.
I heard the word bi-curious, just so you know.
Go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can write a review and make your picks of the week and your ratings and get on the show. And if you need more stuff to read or if you really just need anything at all, go to ifanboy.com/Amazon where you can do all your purchases from amazon.com and help ifanboy out in the process. It's real simple. Just click the big old banner there and go right into Amazon and start your shopping and you help ifanboy out in the process and it helps.
Seriously,
keep...
we really need you to do that.
Yeah.
Starting now.
So if you could, that'd be great. So
my latest Amazon purchase was the Batman and Robin Absolute Edition.
Well done.
Which is awesome.
I bought a new center channel speaker, and it was too big for my. I bought the wrong size. It was too big for my entertainment center, so I had to set it back. Sad.
I bought the Osprey Raptor 10 hydration pack.
Cool.
What the fuck is that?
It's like a camel pack.
Oh,
because he's extreme.
I thought that was something to do with your house.
Bought a snowboard helmet. Bought something else. I don't know. Yeah. I got Prime. I just send it to me. That's fine.
Right. You think we're going to visit you in the hospital when you paralyze yourself?
I would really like my rib to stop hurting.
Okay.
Yeah. It was all better, and then I fell down again. Ironically, on my wallet. No, I was snowboarding, and I had my wallet in like a front pocket, and it was the very last run of the day. I hadn't fallen all day, and I fell, and my like wallet got jammed into my ribs, and it was my credit cards that did it, which I think is poetic in a way, because there was certainly no cash in it.
Oh, that's great.
And now every time I cough or sneeze, it's like being stabbed.
Yeah. Let's do an email. We got a couple emails here from the community. The first one's from Isaac, who is ICN1983 on the website. And Isaac says, it seems like every week DC is canceling a bunch of books that weren't high performers but had rabid fan bases, like Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, and I, Vampire. What if instead of canceling these books, DC simply stopped physically printing them but produced them exclusively for digital download? Maybe they could reduce the page count to keep costs low and not overburden their creators, or use it as an opportunity to try out new talent that might not be ready for prime time. Then, if there's sufficient interest, collect these stories in trade paperbacks or digests.
It's not a bad plan. I was going to say that doesn't work until you said bring down the page count. However, I think that DC probably believes, rightfully so, that there still isn't enough of a audience that's convertible from paper to digital.
Well, I think possibly that could be one thing. I think they're kind of
DC.
I think they're kind of already doing it, though, but not with in-continuity stories.
They've got like 5 or 6 digital-only books.
Yeah, a lot of them. And I honestly think that we're going to see more of them, and I wouldn't be surprised if they go in this direction, but I think they're taking a slow test-the-waters kind of approach before they go full hog, you know?
You don't want to go full hog too soon.
Right, exactly. You don't want to go...
They're
doing Smallville. They're doing the Batman Tales of the Dark Knight. They're doing the Ame comics. The Green Arrow book. What else? Then there's some other stuff too.
The DC Timverse books.
Yeah. So now, but the what's interesting is that, for as far as I can tell, this kind of gets into business and organization. But that's all being done out of the West Coast under Hank Canals. I think it's interesting because he recently is the kind of the business person in charge of Vertigo and the digital stuff, and that is the separation with and all the continuity paper stuff is coming out of their New York office. So at some point, those two kind of have to merge, which we haven't really seen much of that happening recently. They've been very separated. That's my point.
That's going to be the fear that everyone has is when the whole operation moves to California.
Yeah.
And then everything will change.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I wouldn't be surprised if they do it. I also wouldn't be surprised. Marvel has tinkered with it, with the Infinite Comics, they did the two Infinite Comics. They're way early. They're behind DC in doing it. But you never know what might happen. I mean, Ron Peraza, who used to work at DC and Digital, worked at Comixology. Now he's at Marvel. We don't know what he's doing. Maybe he's working on that. So it could be interesting. I don't know.
But I think also, as we discussed last week, Marvel seems to be less open to experimenting beyond the traditional model.
Correct. Yeah.
Whereas DC seems to be in a position where they feel like they have to, because they're I feel like they're under more pressure to sell books and grow that.
Yeah.
That might be just a feeling, but that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
Greater corporate pressure to do.
So that could happen, Isaac, but not anytime soon. Certainly not soon enough for Frankenstein or Vampire.
Yeah. I mean, basically, the sales of the digital titles would need to be enough to justify the production of the books, even digitally, because it's still, even though you're not printing the books, it still costs money.
The highest cost is still the people cost.
Yep, exactly. The overhead and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, exactly.
The creators. Yeah.
Yep. So, all right. On to our next email from Jeremy. Jeremy Spoken. Sorry.
Oh, wait, I'll read this.
Yeah, you do it. Do it.
Really, really enjoy this show. I received the Fear Agent Omnibus for Christmas based on your recommendation. You're welcome. And it is better than I could have anticipated. I'm reading it as slowly as I can to make it last as close to the release of volume number 2 as possible. Is there something else in the same vein that you would suggest that will help me bridge the gap? That's an excellent question, Jeremy. I'm going to leave it to Mr. Ron Richards to answer this question.
The slowly is what got me.
Slowly. Eddie Vedder hasn't showed up for a while.
Eddie Vedder has not showed up for a while.
Yeah.
Sexy Michael Lark.
Here's another email.
So what else is kind of pulpy sci-fi that is Fear Agent-esque?
There's not a lot. That's why Fear Agent's so special.
Yeah.
Wally Wood book just came out from...
Yeah, you can't go around Wally Wood. You can't go... it's a little older, but... if you like Remender, the Strange Girl on the Bus is a good way to go from there. That's a complete story you can get from Image. That's out.
Where?
From Image.
Okay.
I don't know if you heard of them. A little upstart.
I would trust his recommendation.
You might want to consider Xenozoic Tales, which are... I forget who pushed it. Who published it. I was going to say who pushed it out, like they gave it birth. But those were older...
Woohoo! Really? Sorry, what?
So Xenozoic Tales, Volume 1, is available. It's up on Amazon. Mark Schultz's classic comic that was done in the same kind of... inspired by the same kind of EC kind of comics. It's the comic that Cadillacs and Dinosaurs kind of came from. Remember that concept from the 90s? Yeah. So it like kind of takes place in the 26th century.
I recommend checking out Rick's Cap right now.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it really is very similar vein.
Yeah.
It's just Marvel flavored as opposed to.
Yeah.
But he's definitely working in those same muscles, I think.
Yeah.
So it's tough because I don't think there's anything that captures that quite that madcap, but sensibility, but also in a modern through a modern lens. I mean, the stuff
that was the thing that I wrote in my review of it is that it seems absurd that there isn't another example of anything like this.
Yeah.
Because it's such a natural fit for the comic book form and for this sort of fantasy adventure kind of stuff that we've got going on, and it doesn't happen. There isn't anything else, which is crazy because there should be.
Yep.
So that's why we're kind of lucky to have it in the first place, I think. Yeah. I'm sorry, it's not an easier answer, but that's the problem.
Enjoy it. Go read Strange Girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, our next email comes from Tim, who's Tumultuous Times on the website. And Tim says, I've come to realize I'm reading a fair amount of single issues every month, somewhere around 25 to 30. And I've been thinking of trying to cut back on single issues and picking up things in trades. But I was wondering what the rate of publishing trades is compared to single issues. I know trades usually cover story arcs, but does the trade come out the month after the last issue of the story, or does it usually take a few months? How do I transition from reading everything in single issues to reading at least a few things in trades? Will it be cheaper to do so or about the same? And do I pick books like Batman that I know will be great as a collected edition or others that are worth reading but aren't absolutely amazing? And here's
a lot of questions.
Here's the problem with your logic, Tim. You just need to buy everything all the time. That's the solution.
Oh, look at Mr. Industry. Jesus.
There's no, as far as we can tell, not everything gets traded, by the way. Not everything gets put in trade.
No.
Yeah, and everybody does it differently. If you want to wait for trades from DC,
you can wait up to a year for that.
Little Rip Van Winkle action going on there. Marvel puts them out pretty fast. Image tends to put them out pretty fast. Sometimes the trade comes out the same day as the last issue.
Or the next issue.
There's no standard. Basically, DC's the slowest. You know,
DC's really slow.
They took, on some of those 52 books, a year to put the first volume out.
That was a hardcover.
Yeah. It's funny. Marvel puts out like 10 to 12 trades a week. They really put a lot of trades out. No one seems to buy them, but they put them out. As someone who sees that comics
page
every week.
Somebody must buy them.
Well, if you look at those sales charts.
They don't. Yeah.
But they seem to trade everything.
Yeah.
Or almost
everything.
But
that speaks to the thing where the highest cost is the upfront, if they're printing so much, they're probably getting relatively good deals on that.
And the thing is also like on the Marvel and DC side, like trying to some people, because I know the guys over on 11 O'Clock Comics have made the jump from issues to trades, and they're playing the game of trying to decide, okay, well, do I get that in hardcover or do I wait for the trade on that? And it used to be that, I mean, DC seems to be doing some stuff in hardcover, some stuff in trade.
Depends on how popular.
Yeah, exactly. Depends on popularity. Whereas Marvel has been pretty good about doing everything in hardcover first and then following up with the trade.
Interesting is that DC, they released like the Batman action and Wonder Woman stuff was in hardcover, and then Swamp Thing and Animal Man
were in
softcover.
Because, so that's again, popularity.
Yes. Yeah, no, I know. Yeah. And to keep people having a frame of reference for where these things actually are at.
Right. And so Marvel's been pretty good about doing like a premier hardcover and then doing a trade paperback. But now with Marvel Now and most recently, they've just been doing just paperbacks or just hardcovers, or like there's no rhyme or reason. So I'm sure they have a rhyme or reason, but to us, we don't know what it is. So that's the only problem. So the thing that you decide to not read in issues may not get collected or may take a long time.
But then you'll never know about it. Yeah, so you'll exactly. know you're missing. What else does he want to know here? How do you transition from reading singles to trades? You just stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
you find something else to read in the meantime.
My biggest problem would be remembering what to go get. You know what I mean? Like if I stop buying issues completely, I think the repetitive.
You call that a problem. I call it savings.
That's true. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. So that would be the challenge.
I often found that like it made me not care as much. Like the thing is with some books, the fun part is kind of the issues and following as it comes out. I don't think that people would be as into Superior Spider-Man if they're not following any issues. I think that's a thing that it's more fun to see it that way.
Yeah.
You know.
Or on the other hand, or you read it all as one story and you don't have the people freaking out. You have this is the story of this, yep. and they read the whole arc.
Yep. Is it strong enough for that?
I don't know. Hasn't come out yet. Only one issue.
Well, sort of. Yeah.
Cheaper, about the same. It can be cheaper if you buy your single issues from like a place like DCBS, and they're really cheap. But if you buy them, you know, from the comic store for full price, then you can get cheaper trades online. I mean, it all depends on how you buy your things.
They're priced differently too. A lot of, you know, the first volumes of a lot of things are cheaper than the later ones because mm-hmm. they've got you. So why not jack it up? It depends. Is every company's a little different? Every book's a little different. And it's really kind of up to you to forge your path with that and find out what's important to you about reading the comics, I guess.
Yeah. And do I pick books like Batman or I know it will be great as a collected or others that are worth, I mean, I can't tell you how to
read reviews
books.
Like you would anything else. It's like how you pick what you're doing. The thing about with trades is that you're pretty much going to know whether people like your story or not if you're paying any attention.
What I do with trades is I tend to get the ones, if I've already read the issues, the ones I'm definitely going to read again. You know, that's how I go for buying the trades or the decision-making process anyway. So depends. How much do you want to read the story, I guess, is a good question.
It's ironic because I've scaled way back on the trades that the collected editions I buy, and I've actually ramped up on issues. So I'm just going in the wrong direction. Like very rarely.
I have too. Yeah, very, same thing.
Yeah, very rarely have I said, you know, like I want to, you know, like, wow, I love that arc. I want to get that and collect it. Like I'm more likely to get the really nice, you know, omnibus edition or, you know, oversized edition or something like that than I am to get a trade paperback these days. So yeah. of something that I bought in issues. There's other stuff that I'll get in trade paperback that I didn't read in issues. So yeah, mm-hmm. but it's crazy. All right. So if you have any questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. And we get voicemail, and we got a quick voicemail from somebody who's got an opinion on artists.
Hey, guys, at iFanboy. It's Andrew from New Jersey, and I just have a question. A while ago back, I read on Twitter that some guy was imagining, like, what if the image revolution happened now? And some people were saying that it wouldn't happen because most artists nowadays aren't on the books monthly every month. You know, there's the rotating bullpen artists they have now like they used to. So what do you think that says about the artists nowadays? You know, even if they don't, like, if they need a break so they can deliver their best work, I don't know, I'd still rather see them skimp on one panel and still see them on the book every month than what it is now. I don't know. Tell me what you guys think about the whole situation and all that.
You know, I was thinking about this concept the other day. I was giving it some thought. It was a good 4 hours or so. Just kind of looking out the window and thinking about art. No, but I was actually thinking, because I was actually talking to a comic creator who's working on a comic and talking about dealing with a writer, who's talking about dealing with artists and things like that. And I think a part of me agrees with you, Andrew. I want the artist on a monthly book, month in, month out. But the reality of the fact is that there are very few artists who can do that now. And to your point where you'd rather have a page or a panel that's skimped so you can do monthly, listen to what we just talked about with Saga. We don't look at it in this context of, well, in the course of this whole series, one or couple page or so will be not so bad. We look at each individual comic as the work, and then we criticize it as it's the only comic that ever came out of that series. You know, and so because of that, I think the days of the monthly artist are somewhat over. And realistically, like how Marvel's doing it now with Marvel Now, and that they're doing arcs and they're rotating, like what you know, like that's the new reality. And you know, I'm kind of okay with it.
Well, and that's, you know, in contrast to how DC is doing it, which is find artists who can do it.
Yeah.
And in a lot of cases, it leads to art that's not as exciting.
Not as
very lackluster.
Yeah.
A really good example of and I think one thing we have seen is that we came out of a period a few years ago where they weren't switching around and books were late and everybody was complaining. So they fixed that in the best way that they knew how. And for Marvel, it was alternate artists. And for DC, it was find people who can draw that fast.
Yeah.
And this is what we get for it. This is what we have. And I was thinking about we put up a story about Francesco Francavilla's kind of come on and do two issues of Hawkeye.
Yep.
And for Marvel, obviously, it makes more sense for them to have 12 issues a year out or 30, depending on how they're looking at it. But they don't want to have 6 or 7 issues a year from Hawkeye just to keep, you know, David Aja working. So they found a way to get around that, and they put fill-in artists and everyone. Same thing they're doing with Cliff Chang on Wonder Woman is another example of it. Like they can't do a monthly book, and I absolutely agree. Like I don't want a half-assed version of that artist. I definitely don't want that.
Yeah.
That's worse than anything. I think
it's a challenge now. It's rough. I mean I don't know what the right answer is. You know, like I would much rather, like, would you want to see a comic with double duty? Like I said, you know, where there are, you know, where a 20-page comic has got, you know, 11 pages by one guy and 8 pages by another guy. You don't like it?
I don't like that usually. It worked really well on on Iron Fist.
Yeah.
It worked well on Captain America.
Yeah.
So it's possible, but those had flashback elements that made that possible. You want to take a book like Saga, like I'll wait.
Yeah.
I think there's also a bit of rose-colored glasses about the past. And that there's a lot of, you know, there was an idea that got, you know, 20 years ago, guys hit their deadlines and, you know, books came out the same. They didn't. They were late and they had fill-ins just like they do now.
Yeah.
You know, there's an idea that Jack Kirby did 4 books a month, so everyone must have, but it's not the case.
Yeah.
In fact, I think once you got beyond that golden age period, the guys, that's when the lateness started, because the golden age guys are really the guys who could do that.
And they weren't putting in the same amount of time and care as the guys are now.
Yeah. People expect much higher.
Jerome Pena doesn't become Jerome Pena in 1961. It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't have put up with it.
Yeah.
It's a challenge.
They'd be like, I don't care how good it looks. Book's got to come out. May 1st. Come on.
It's tough. There's no way to please everyone, right? Because we, as you said, either the books are going to be late with the same artist or they're going to be fill-ins and people complain either way. And I do think that of the choices, Marvel's probably the best, is alternate artists on arcs.
Yeah.
You know, would I love to see Stuart Immonen draw every issue of all new X-Men? Sure. But, you know, Dave Marquez is good, and I get to keep the book keeps coming out every other day. Oh, shit, issue 7 just came out. Yeah, issue 7 just dropped on my table.
Like, the way that Marvel distracts you is just by pummeling you with product.
Right.
Just get more. Have another one. The writers like it.
All right, so if you have any questions, you can call us an email, or you can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697. If this wasn't enough podcasting for you, you can listen to iFanboy Don't Miss, where we talk to a creator about an upcoming book that's coming out. Last week, I talked to Kelly Sue DeConnick about Captain Marvel number 9. This week, Paul Montgomery is talking to, I don't know if I want to say it, I think he's talking to somebody. I want to make sure. I should have checked to see who it was before we recorded. I've been busy. either way, it'll be worth checking out. So go to iTunes and subscribe to it, or go to ifanboy.com on Mondays and check that out.
I've had a Make Comics podcast 2 weeks in a row.
Look at you.
Well done.
There you go.
Look at you.
Look at him. Look at him go.
Look at you.
Make Comics. I talked to Andy Schmidt from Comics Experience about some stuff. I really liked this one this last week. It was about making a living in comics. Guy asked, you know, does this guy have to have a day job? Does this? And we really talked about the economics of what it is to be a comic book creator and what that means in the real world as opposed to what people think it means. It was very interesting.
Yep. Cool. And you could subscribe to that, and you can get it at ifanboy.com. I enjoy listening to it. All right, so finally, so what we alluded to earlier in the show, if you were on the internet this past Friday or over the weekend, you might have saw the news on ifanboy.com. We had a bunch of some announcements to be made. The first quick announcement is that ifanboy.com is now an independent entity once again. We've ended our relationship with Graphically, amicably. Nothing to read into or anything like that. Basically, Graphically has been a great team to be on for the past couple of years. They've supported iFanboy and have done a great job of really kind of championing what we've been doing and wanted to do and helped us grow the site. But as Graphically is kind of adjusting their business and focusing on general publishing and not just comics, it didn't really make a ton of sense for them to take what little resources they have and not focus them on what their main mission is. So we chatted about it with Graphically CEO Miha Baldwin and came to a lovely agreement. And now iFanboy is back in a sole owned and operated status by the original iFanboy group. So,
and Connor's firstborn son has nothing to do with it.
Nothing to do with it at all.
Well, it's important to note that it is an amicable split.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Josh and I still work at Graphically. It's fine. We're all happy. It was just the way things needed to be, and we made it happen.
Yep. Exactly. And so we want to take a moment to thank all of our iFanboy members. I know that the iFanboy membership has kind of faded in prominence in this past year as we've been busy working for Graphically and working on iFanboy and things like that. But those of you iFanboy members who've stuck with us have really, truly, really have kept keep the lights on. I know I always say that, but that is totally the truth. And now that we're back to an independent status, even more so now, we thank you and we thank you for your support. And you can look forward to some interesting stuff around iFanboy membership and ways for you to help out iFanboy as 2013 progresses.
So that's it, right? All right.
Yeah, cool. Excellent. Great job. No, so then in a little bit of uncanny timing, it is with a heavy, heavy, heavy heart that I also at the same time announced that I will be parting ways with my two best friends here at iFanboy. I will be resigning from my editorial duties at iFanboy and resigning from the podcast because I have taken a job with Image Comics. And as you could probably guess, I don't really think it'd be legit for me to keep doing iFanboy while working for a publisher. There's enough reason why everybody yells at us for what we are. I don't want to deal with any sort of bias or anything like that. But yeah, it's a real exciting thing. As you can tell, Image Comics has been on a roll this past couple of years. And we've had a great relationship with them. Just in general, you know, a lot of you have seen our interviews with Robert Kirkman as well as other great Image creators. And we've interviewed, you know, publisher Eric Stevenson a couple times. And some of the things that Image is looking to do happen to fit with my particular career experience. I'm going to be the director of business development there, so that means I'm going to get to work with work on their sales and marketing. I'm going to be talking and working with retailers, with book distributors, digital stuff. So it's really just kind of a fascinating, fascinating kind of opportunity, and I wouldn't have done it without the support of these guys here, Josh and Connor, as well as the rest of my fanboy. They can attest that it was not an easy decision. So. But the great news is that we are losing me but gaining a Paul. Paul Montgomery, who you've heard on the podcast before, will be stepping into my shoes and be a regular here on the iFanboy podcast with Josh and Connor, as well as doing pick of the week reviews and book of the month reviews and continuing to do the great work at iFanboy. And honestly, let's be honest, he's better than me, so I think we're better off in that regard. I cannot thank Josh and Connor, I cannot thank Paul, I cannot thank the rest of the iFanboy staff, and I cannot thank the whole iFan base for the years of enjoyment and fun and support you guys have provided. And it's really, to see the outpouring of congratulations and stuff like that happen on Friday when we announced this was really overwhelming. So that's it.
Is he still talking?
Cry, you shit.
Yeah. Are you really crying?
Yes.
I've been in denial and been flippant about everything the whole time.
Well, did you notice how I had really a lot of trouble talking during the Batman review?
Yeah.
No. It was sort of, that's when it sort of started to really sink in, and that's why I was not able to form complete thoughts. But I think it's important for everyone to know that, you know, when Ron came to us and told us he had this opportunity, Josh and I didn't hesitate to say, you absolutely have to take it. There's no rancor on our part.
That was literally the conversation we had. I mean, we got on the phone, I told them what was happening, and their response was, Josh said it was like, you're crazy if you don't do it.
Yeah.
So
we're very happy for him. We're very proud of him. There's no one better for the job he's about to do. And, you know, so we are very looking forward to seeing what he's got for us. And we're looking forward to, you know, what the future brings. We're excited about Paul. Paul's been great. If you listen to the show, you know Paul's filled in a lot. He's been our go-to fill-in guy. He fits in well with us.
Yeah.
You know, which is the most important thing about doing a podcast with someone. And, you know, we'll lose a bit with Ron. We'll gain a bit with Paul. And hopefully it'll still be fun for everybody.
I believe that iFanboy will continue to power on. What we've built here has been so special and so just so amazing. The past, I mean, 12 years total, but the past 6 years, 7 years have been just amazing. So many people, you know, other podcasters, other comics media folks, people, the publishers, all the creators, all the stuff that I've had the opportunity to connect with and get to know is just, it's been life altering. It's been changing. We've joked a lot about. Josh Connor and I have joked a lot about in the past 5 years, like, you know, like I can't imagine my life without iFanboy in it.
Yeah.
And I don't really know how, like, I guess I'll listen to the show. I don't like it's crazy.
Well, you know, and that's a good, you know, place to talk about next week. Next week is Ron's last show. It is his last pick of the week after 12 years of writing picks of the week.
Yep.
And so we hope to do a fun show. We're not going to get, you know, we've been talking about it now. Josh is crying. But we're really going to do the full-on farewell to Ron next week on the show, and that's his last episode.
Yep.
We're going to do probably an extra long show, and we are probably going to live stream it over Ustream like we do sometimes for special shows, so you can come along and watch the blubbering
happen. We're hoping to.
We're hoping to. Yeah. We haven't really nailed it down yet, but that's our plan, right. So that you can watch Josh cry and Ron drink, and I don't know what I'll do. I might cry, too. Yeah. I've been holding it together, but... I might just not be able to speak, so I'll just be the guy quietly sitting in the corner. So
yeah, and I know a lot of this is going to be repeated next week and stuff like that, but just to reiterate, anybody who cares or whatever, that these two guys are like brothers to me. And while this kind of is a change in our relationship, nothing will ever change that. And I wouldn't be surprised to see me knock around the halls of my fanboy once in a while, because Lord knows I won't be able to stay away. So so go forth and be excellent, my friends. You guys are amazing, and I say it over and over again that I can't thank you enough. But I dragged you into this, so I'm glad that my leaving it will continue on. So yeah, okay.
How you doing there, Josh? You all right?
I can't get it together.
I'll talk. So in the meantime, you can check out iFanboy.com while Ron is still here for one more week. You can read my Pick of the Week review. You won't be reading his Book of the Month review. That'll be Paul's debut, probably.
Connor was really urgent about that.
Paul, you need to start right away. I can't be doing another Book of the Month review so soon. You can read all the great news and discussion that goes on there every day at iFanboy.com. You can also go to iFanboy.com/about to see our updated staff page. As well as the social network links to follow us online. You can follow all the action at twitter.com/iFanboy and facebook.com/iFanboy as well.
And as I mentioned, you can email us. You can email these guys at contact@iFanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697.
And if you want to write a review for us in iTunes, you should do that for this show or the other shows or other shows that you like. Make sure that you tell other people about it if you like it and however the way is best for you. You put it on your Facebook page. Get one of those sandwich boards and stand on the side of the road next to the subway guy. It'll bug him, but it might bring us a few more listeners. And what the hell, let's give it a shot.
Awesome.
I would love that. So I want to see. I want to see a sandwich board guy walk in the streets of Park City in Utah during Sundance.
There you go.
All right,
a film deal.
So that's it for this week's show.
I didn't see that coming.
until next week, I continue to be Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm going to be Michael Caine because it's easier.
Just hide your emotions behind Michael Caine.
Or better.
I can write things that are serious, but I can't say them.
How hard is it to switch gear? Could you do a conversation between Michael Caine and Eddie Vedder?
So, did you? Wait, I can't. Hold on. Sometimes it's a bit hard. But could you tell us about a concert in Stockholm in 91? We just unplugged our instruments and played. It was very nice.
That wasn't as funny as I thought it'd be.
Sorry.
He's a little more.
That's the way to end the show.